we see two reasons why suggestion programs succeed or fail. The basic two things that they have to do is they have to acknowledge the ideas that are coming in, show that you actually heard them, okay? And the second is just implement some of them. Doesn't have to be all of them. Could be as little as 10%, but just do something with some of them.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm co-founder and CEO at procurementexpress.com. It's the software that helps you take the hassle out of managing your company's purchasing with magical features. And today I am joined by the CEO of getfeder.com, Duncan Murta. Duncan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, James. How are you doing?
I'm living my best life. I understand that you're heading to Taiwan next week. We'll talk about that later on. So you're obviously a man who knows how to live the good life like myself.
I try.
Good. All right. So listen, I want to get into, how you can save, this case study you have on saving 300K for one of your customers. But before I do that, let's get a bit of context of, who you are, what are you the CEO of, and how does GetFeder work?
Okay, well, who I am is I live in Kildare. I'm married with two kids. I co-founded Vetter, which is getvetter.com. It's an online employee suggestion box tool back in 2011. And more recently, this year, I've founded, I'm going solo this time, a new venture, auditshine.com. But maybe we'll mention that a little bit later.
Ah, okay, great. So tell me, where did the original idea for GetFeder come from? Who was your first customer? What sparked the whole thing?
Well, it was back when I was working in financial services. I had a colleague from England who was always in my boss's office. He was always getting his ideas heard while I was back in my cubicle working away. He'd wander back over. He'd tell us he's after telling a new idea and we're going to implement it, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be wondering, why can't I be in there? I'm just as creative as you. So then I began to think, could we develop a simple system, almost a Twitter-like system, maybe with up and down votes? That graduated from there. I came to the conclusion, ideas are not simply good or bad. It's not as black and white as that. And I had a colleague at the time who was interested in learning how to code. And then Startup Weekend Taipei, because I was living in Taiwan at the time, came up and we thought maybe we could, instead of, talking about this, maybe we could jump in, enter that competition and, have a startup at the end of it, which we did. We came second. Maybe that was a good thing. The company that came first, they got venture capital funding and flamed out in just a couple of months. And we survived. And about 2-3 months later, we had an Australian customer, a financial services customer, and they are still a customer now. So that's what, 11 years, 12 years. And they were our first customer. And it was a glorious day when we got our first customer. Perhaps you remember when you got yours.
100%. Tell me about it. I mean, I remember going way back before Procurement Express, I managed to get my first $10 online order and I promptly went out and spent about $300 celebrating with my wife or my girlfriend at the time. What did you do when you got your first customer?
With me, it's always so drawn out and it wasn't a credit card payment. So it was like, can you prepare a quote if we want a quote? And we got excited and said yes. And then a few days would pass and he'd say, can you get us a purchase order? And then we'd say yes. And we'd wonder, have we got this? Because we had no experience. We didn't know if it's a purchase order, as you well know, it means it's pretty much done. So there was never a eureka moment, never a fist pump moment, unfortunately. But there has been since then. But back then it was so drawn out that we never really celebrated, to be honest.
Yeah, very good. Funny that we're not so great at celebrating the successes. Maybe you and I should go into Dublin. We can celebrate that first sale someday.
That's a good idea. I have a flight at 3 a.m., so I could go directly to the airport, James.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Wow. Okay. You know how to plan a big night out for me is like 10 a.m. or 10 p.m.
Okay. 10 p.m.
Okay, cool. So, all right. I want to get to this 300K, but you said something there which interested me, which is not all ideas are just good or bad. What did you learn about that? Why can't you just have a thumbs up system for your ideas? Sounds like a pretty good idea to me.
Well, I suppose it's people's perception of what's good or bad and people's understanding just reading a few lines of a description of what an idea is, and then to be able to get, to make an assessment. Like, that's okay if you're Julius Caesar, down or up, whether the poor fella survives in the ring out there. But this is this is meant to be a more positive environment. And so we thought a rating system would be better. And that said, companies who choose to switch on the rating system in the software, because it's one of our features, they don't necessarily take action. If it's a five-star blockbuster idea, it doesn't mean they automatically do it. And it doesn't mean they automatically reject it if it has a poor performance. They usually make up their own mind, helped by the rating and what people felt. One of the reasons companies do switch on that rating feature without getting too much into the weeds is it does make the employees feel that they have a bit of a say. They get to have a vote on what's good, what's bad. And that is an important part of this. We've found it's kind of, for want of a better phrase, almost a gateway drug into the actual submitting of ideas. They can vote, they can comment, they can feel comfortable with the software, and then later they can come up with their brainwaves and participate.
Interesting. And I was at a conference that you and I sometimes attend together, MicroConf, at the weekend, and someone described how they had it was more like a feature approach for their software, but they turned it off because people would just go in and go, yeah, motherhood and apple pie, these are all great ideas, 5, 5, 5, 5, we should do everything. Is that a problem? Like, do people just vote for everything, or actually are they too busy and you don't have to worry about that?
It's the too busyness problem. We would love to have that other problem that you just described there, James. Unlike, say, a CRM, or I assume your own Procurement Express, you don't have to use our software, okay? And if you're a disengaged or lazy or extremely busy employee, you might not use our software. And that presents some challenges in terms of sales and retention and stuff like that. But, you know, that's just the game we play, isn't it?
So let's get into it then about this saving. So let's say I'm working on a finance team. I'm guessing I want to survey people. Am I going to ask them, like, what happened with this piping company, for example? Did they seed the question? Is it like, I'm looking for any ideas, or I'm looking for ideas on how we can save money, or what's the best practice? Like, should the question I asked, did that influence the quality of the responses you get?
It may. I can say, specifically about that company, they didn't ask directly for saving money. And I have not seen that approach work that well.
Interesting.
If you think of it, if you are a junior level employee and you see the bosses who you might perceive as being up in their ivory tower asking you to save them more money, you wouldn't jump to it, would you? A less direct approach usually works best. Asking people for their ideas. We actually have a very basic feature called categories. And typically we encourage people to make categories to guide people into the type of ideas that you're looking for. So it could be cost savings, waste reduction, continuous improvement, safety. And that just gets people thinking about those elements. Safety is a very good one to ask employees about, because it has the double impact of both showing them that you actually care about their safety and improving safety. So it's a very good one to ask about. And for example, this piping customer, they got lots of safety ideas, but they're hard to measure sometimes, unless you do a big calculation and calculate the amount of debts and all that horrible stuff. But they didn't do that. And we didn't do that with our $300,000 in savings. That was pure savings on wasted materials or the calculation of waiting time or process improvement that they got to that figure. And I think that was only from 5 or 6 ideas. That wasn't from the whole thing. That was only from what they measured. That was about 2 years ago, and that was in, I think, the first year and a half. So I should check in with them again. I might get a bigger, more impressive number if I ask, you know?
It's okay. I think most of us would take 300K. That's a nice top up. So tell us about the implementation. So, you know, I've seen employee suggestion boxes on walls in different places, empty and ignored. So what made this company successful in actually getting the feedback? Because like you say, people are busy. They don't have time to be hanging around, you know, giving the bosses.
Very true. Well, we see two reasons why suggestion programs succeed or fail. The basic two things that they have to do is they have to acknowledge the ideas that are coming in, show that you actually heard them, okay? And the second is just implement some of them. Doesn't have to be all of them. It could be as little as 10%, but just do something with some of them. And this company certainly did that. I think they were doing that before they They started working with Vedder, but they just had a very inefficient system. They had the old box stuck to the wall, literally a box on the wall, maybe covered in cobwebs. I've heard that often chewing gum is put into these boxes, which is pretty terrible behavior, very juvenile. So they came to us and they wanted something a bit more modern. That's another component of this with manufacturers. So you and I are in the kind of techie world, but the manufacturers are often not very techie, but they want to appeal to younger workers and they want to show that we're a modern company. We're not trapped in the old paper and wooden box times. So they actually came up with something that's now a core feature of ours, which is a simple QR code. You scan the QR code and you go directly to the submission page. From that, then that evolved to, they asked us, is there a way that we could provide feedback to those shop floor, manufacturing floor workers who are not in front of a computer, who often don't have a company email address? They asked us, how could we get feedback back to those guys? So we designed a simple page, basically, that works a little bit like a tracking page for FedEx or DHL, where you input your tracking number and then you can see at a very high level what's going on with your idea. It's a public page. So you can't see, like, you can't see what's in the package, or you can't see what the specifics of the idea are, but you can see what's going on with your own personal idea. And that company puts that up on monitors, and that has the double impact of getting feedback to the actual person who submitted the idea, but also showing everybody else that we are taking action. This isn't a black hole, because the page refreshes. We coded it that way. So they can see a dribble of activity that's going on. And that, again, shows people that they're being responded to. So these guys did a lot of things right. And that's one of the reasons we were very happy when they agreed to a case study. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. So it, like many things in life, it's not just as simple as turning on the software. This company actually had a put the effort behind it, had a plan, and that's where they got the reward.
Yeah, it's not just a setup and sit back, cross your arms and see it work. It takes a little bit of work, a little bit of effort.
Yeah. So where did the actual, you know, money-saving ideas come from? Like, what were they in practice?
There were simple stuff such as materials usage. That was a lot of it. They're making a lot of products, processing a lot of product. So it was simple material savings. It was reducing processing time so that you could get more material out. These kind of simple changes make a huge difference when you're going volume, three shifts a day, 365 or almost 365 days a year. Yeah. It's nothing more glamorous than that, but they are often the most effective ways that you can save money or make more money.
What I like about this is it's a simple way to be innovative. I was at a trade show recently where there was a panel on innovation and people joked about using, you know, dark blue instead of light blue in their Excel sheets in terms of innovation in the finance team, because that's as far as you got sometimes. But this is something that the finance team could actually roll out. You could measure the result. And it sounds like, I mean, it's also, I mean, without getting too woolly about it, it's a good for employee retention, feels people, their feedback more part of the family, so to speak, more part of the business. Like, it helps with your, what we would call EMPS or employee satisfaction. Have you any stories, or have you any sense that this is a good effective tool for encouraging engagement with your staff over and above the cost savings you can get?
I don't have good numbers on that, but I can tell you, I know you care a lot about leads. We get a lot of leads from where somebody has done an employee engagement survey and the results have been bad, and they think that something like our tool could help them. And often it does. I wish I had better data on the results. Maybe that's something I should roll up my sleeves and do. But yeah, that's the connection we have to engagement. When I was trying to get that case study done with the piping customer, one thing he communicated to me, and he wanted to include it in the case study, that the actual cost savings were just the tip of the iceberg, he called it. That was his phrase. Because the increased engagement was what they really benefited from. And that was actually the goal. Sometimes the savings are just a kind of a side benefit, and it's the pure engagement and the feeling that staff have a voice and belong and are listened to that has more value than just the simple money.
What about you know, your worst nightmare with all these suggestions are we should have a 4-day week and let's have biodegradable rat poison instead of the usual stuff. And, you know, we should be, well, maybe offsetting our carbon is a reasonable one. But like, how do you handle stuff that you just can't action? Or is it a way for employees to sort of, you know, express their dissatisfaction? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Or,
well, I suppose people could still say those things at a meeting, right? They could still email those round, CC the whole company, 100 people. Mm-hmm. So unless you're stopping that kind of thing, people are going to share these kind of ideas. About half the customers do switch on a feature, not to get into the weeds too much, whereby they have control. They can approve or reject the ideas coming into the software. Mm-hmm. So it depends a little bit on your culture, whether you want to do that. And that usually is a way that they head off and block anything related to, I don't know, sport or the politics in America, which we know can be very divisive, right. Or anything that's a pure complaint that they should go directly to HR about. Hasn't been a problem, James, I have to say.
Very good. No, I can see it. I mean, it's better you know about it, right? And the other thing that strikes me is some people are great on email and great in meetings, but the quiet ones sometimes have great suggestions, or at least suggestions you want to know about. And this is a way of they can get involved without it. I guess it can it be anonymous, or is there always like a name?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. Most customers give people the choice to be anonymous or not. Right. Again, it depends on the culture. And then some companies are like, no way are we doing anonymous. Yeah. And yesterday I had a call with a nonprofit in New York, a longtime customer, and they want to be completely anonymous. There's huge contrasts in attitudes. But the important thing is that the door is open to new ideas.
I guess, I mean, if you have a whistleblowing policy, you know, it might be useful to allow anonymity. Yeah. So you can.
That's a slightly different area. I don't know, James. I don't know what your thoughts are. You have a bit more experience than me. Would you stay away from that? I don't want to be testifying, although I could get a free flight to Washington and testify to Congress.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of charities have to have a whistleblowing policy, you know, certainly in Ireland. And, you know, it's a mechanism for actually getting the feedback if something's not right and it should be. And, you know, this speaks to embezzlement sometimes as well, like it happens in organizations more than you'd like to think. And fraud also, you know, but you don't want to necessarily be the one associated with it. But getting that information is very important. So I can see a value in it, you know, for sure. Wish there wasn't, but, you know, keeps everyone honest. Even if you know there's a whistleblowing policy, it just puts a blanket of extra, keeps everyone on their toes, if you like. It is best practice. So I can see it being a benefit, you know, for sure.
Yeah, I don't fancy that, James. I think we'll stay away from that feature for now.
All right, fair enough. So listen, let's go back to you as an entrepreneur a bit. You know, you've been in business more than 10 years now. What advice would you give your younger self if you knew now what you knew then, or if you knew then what you knew now? What advice would you give yourself?
Well, I would tell myself, don't bother trying to learn to code. I tried 3 times, maybe 4 times, and I failed. And this isn't any kind of overcoming failure story, James. I didn't overcome failure, so I gave up. And looking back now, I wish I tried to learn something cooler, like the drums. You'd look good and you get to hit stuff. Yeah. So that was a waste of time. Yeah. Apart from that, I feel you have to kind of make the mistakes along the way with a lot of stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I don't tend to think about stuff like that. I don't know about you, but I don't tend to look back that way. Apart from about the coding, because I mean, it was multiple times that I said, I'm definitely going to do it this time. And I gave it a proper go, but it didn't work. Yeah.
Well, I personally love coding, but I totally agree. It's a total, I wouldn't say waste of time, but especially now with no code solutions that are available, you're far better off being a product manager, like someone who can design, especially now with AI, is the commodity that's in most demand. It used to be a struggle just to build anything. But the real struggle is to build something people want. That's the hard part, actually. Put the ladder against the right wall, as we call it. So I'd agree, don't learn to code. I know it's very unpopular to say that, but I say don't learn to code.
It's funny you say no code, because I mentioned a little bit earlier, AuditShine, that is built in no code. And I am a proficient no coder. Yes. In contrast, I don't know why, but it's just enough technical stuff that I can wrap my head around.
So tell us about AuditShine. Let's have a bonus here for the listeners. What does AuditShine do?
So it's a brand new auditing and checklist app, mostly targeting manufacturing. It helps with those daily or weekly audits that are going on in factories. Have you ever worked in manufacturing?
No.
No. Okay. It's going on in thousands and thousands of locations in Ireland as well. They're daily, they're weekly, sometimes multiple times a day. And about 50% of them are still taking place on paper. And James, if I told you the company I talked to on Monday, a big Irish company, multinational, that are still using paper in their clean rooms, you would be shocked. This is going on all over the place. They're taking their paper, they're putting it against the computer, they're manually inputting it into the system. And it's a huge source of wasted time. And I feel an app could greatly help with that in numerous ways, including error reduction. And it seems a little bit unglamorous, but I think the market opportunity is large, and possibly larger than Vetter.
Well, unglamorous. I put my hand up. We're in the most unglamorous software app ever. But the way I look at it is, we send thousands of people home 10 minutes early. That's, if you're one of those people, you're pretty glad we're doing what we're doing. So I'll vote for that. Okay, great. So, Duncan, how can people get in touch with you, maybe find out more about how they could set up their own engagement program for ideas for employees? Where can they find you online?
Well, personally, just look me up on LinkedIn. I think there's only one Duncan Murta, and it's me. And of course, getvetter.com and auditshine.com. I will respond if you hit the contact us form. It'll probably be me that will respond. Respond to most of those. Yeah.
Great. Now, Murta is one of those names we specially designed to catch out the foreigners, right?
The Americans struggle with it. Yeah, they struggle with it. Yeah.
How do you spell Murta?
Murtagh.
Yeah, that's it. That's a tip. If you ever come to Ireland, every now and again, we just sprinkle in these little names and place names so we can figure out who's local and who's not. And that's one of them. We have our own way.
It's a quick way. It's a shortcut. Yeah.
Yeah. Duncan, you're a star. Thanks very much for sharing the stuff today. And we'll see you in the next one.
Yeah, this is good. I look forward to it. Thanks, James. See ya.